Welcome back to Shakedown Shan. I hope you all had a great week. Hope you were doing something productive, getting outside, working on some hobbies. The weather seems to be getting nicer. We did have some rainy days, but you know, I'd rather have rain than snow. My week has been pretty exhausting, but thankfully I have a weekend off and doing some fun things this weekend. Over the week, tutored this boy Monday through Thursday, and he's just exhausted as I am with spring break coming up, all the final exams, and just the workload he had this week to work on was crazy. But, you know, the education system is something we can get into later. Looking towards the weekend, it's, I believe, trout season opens up on Sunday. I do know Sunday's Easter. A lot of you be celebrating Easter. I, however, will not be celebrating Easter. I'm not religious or anything, and so I don't really celebrate it. Don't believe in the Easter bunny, but it is a great holiday for family to get together and everything, but I'm going to take off and go fishing with some very important people in my life. That's how I'm deciding to celebrate. Should be a good time. I like the sun. I like to go fishing. The worms are pretty cool. Let's see, what else do I have planned this weekend? Pretty much just enjoying the weather, you know, the Adirondack air is always nice. It's refreshing. It's just nice to sit around and finally feel all the warmth come back after the cold winter that we had. Hiking will be coming back soon. I know you can go hiking in the snow, but I'm not a huge fan of snow hiking. So as the weather starts to warm up, I highly recommend that you guys try to get outside, make some time to look around all the things that are changing as spring is coming into these mountainous areas. And if you do decide to go hiking while it's a little chilly, all you have to do is just dress comfortable in layers, so you can take layers off here and there, put them back on. Hiking is a really, really good way for you to clear your mind and get in touch with nature and just kind of fill your soul with the positive energy surrounding you outside, not to mention how incredible the views are at the top. I know at the top of Hadley Mountain, there's a 360-degree view. You can see mountains out towards Vermont, New Hampshire, everything. It's crazy. You should really take that hike. You know, if hiking is really not your thing, I suggest you find something that you can enjoy outside, just because being outside in nature does really make you feel good. And, you know, if you're feeling a little down from the winter, I highly recommend that for you. So anyway, let's get into our topic for the day. So I plan on talking about war today. You know, we've been in this war since 2003, which is 15 years ago, and still going on. And all I really have to say is, I mean, I have a lot to say, but my first thing to say is why? Why are we even there? You know, these kids who are old enough to be deployed at 18 years old right now were only 3 when we sent troops over. And so their entire lives growing up, we've been over there fighting these people for what seems to be no reason anymore. And we kind of went over there over a whole bunch of lies anyway to begin with. I mean, the war cry is that we're fighting for freedom and liberty and against terrorism, but we're really not liberating countries, we're destroying them. And 95% of the time, you know, they come back and tell us, oh, well, we went over there for X, Y, and Z, and then we turn around and say, oh, wait, X, Y, and Z weren't right anyway. So, not to mention that these wars are also costing us trillions of dollars for the taxpayers. And, like, where are we getting this money? I don't want to pay for this war. I'm sure a bunch of you don't want to pay for these wars. We're paying not just in money, but in countless lives, innocent lives, children, cities, towns, nature, destroying habitats. and are we're fighting for our, like I said, we're saying we're fighting for our freedom, but you know, we have our government's trying to take away our rights all the time, and our people are even advocating for our rights to be taken away little by little, and they're over here limiting us, limiting our rights, messing with our markets. And how can we be fighting for a government that's doing that? Anyway, so back to the point of these kids that are being deployed over there that were 3 when the war started. You know, recruiting actually starts younger than 18. I remember being in high school, we used to have Army and Navy recruiters come in at lunch, and you go over there and they'd be like, oh, show us how many push-ups you can do and you get a prize or something. And so you got kids lining up to get this, these prizes over there. And then they get pamphlets, they can write down their numbers and their emails. And, you know, some of them start training at 15. I remember I went to school with this one girl. I mean, she's doing great things. She's in Texas. She's, I believe she's a sergeant now. So good for her. I'm glad that she's doing something that she wanted to do. Luckily, she hasn't been deployed or anything. But anyway, you see these kids start training at 15. They're getting in shape. They keep in contact with a recruiter all the time. And they don't even know what they're doing with their life yet. And they're, like, signing their life away to potentially, they could definitely be deployed. They could be signing up to lose their lives when they're only 15. And they get you, they really do get you. They persuade you with paid college and a great income when you leave. And that's a whole nother mess of things that we can get into. But that's really how they get these kids. They have families that can't pay for their college. And, oh, you're going to pay for my college if I sign up to maybe one day have to go fight people and put my life in risk over a free college education. I just think it's a little messed up. But anyway, moving on. So terrorism. So that's what we're fighting, right? Apparently. Well, I hate to tell you, but the more we interfere in these countries, dropping bombs on these countries, the more these people hate us. We're over there invading countries that we have no reason to be into. And that just, it creates this, like, bubble of hatred towards our country. Like, we're these big, bad parents of the world that have to go in and make sure everything's doing everything right. We can't even take care of our own country. You know, Flint, Michigan's been without clean water all this time. We're over trying to tell people how to run their countries. Did you know that we are currently bombing 7 countries right now? I think I have them written down here somewhere. We are in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Libya, and let's see, I think I was on the wrong page. But anyway, we are bombing 7 different countries right now, and I honestly have no idea why. I didn't even know that we were bombing all these countries to begin with. Just to make that even better, did you know that Obama's last year in office, he dropped 26,000 bombs, which is a low estimate because we don't even have, you can't be guaranteed that you have all the data from that. So low estimate being 26,000 for his last year in office, but he was a great president, right? He was so great that he just was off killing. He's a mass murderer. I'm not saying that anyone else was, like Bush or anything, was great. He was terrible too. Obama wasn't any better though. He was just as bad as a war hawk. And, you know, Hillary Clinton would have been worse. And so thank God she's not in office. Trump's not doing so hot getting people home, but it just seems like no matter who we put in office, we're just continuing wars and continuing on and just bombing people and killing people and putting our own American lives at risk and just continuing with death and destruction. And it just sucks that we're over here paying for it, and none of us really even want this anymore. We don't even know why we're over there. I have an article here from, it's written by Matt Uford. It was published in the New York Times magazine, and it's a story about this army guy. I can't remember if he was a general or, he's a lieutenant, it says. He was deployed to Iraq in 2003, and the article's titled, 15 Years Ago, I Helped Start a War That Hasn't Ended. And it's actually a really great article. I suggest looking it up. But he gave this great story account of invading or having the first invasion. And really, he gets into the point that, like, hindsight's 20/20. He went in ready to fight for our country. He thought that he was going to be over there liberating people, and that he would be seen as a liberator. But that's not really how it went, he says. He says the case for invasion was thin, or rather it was thick, but we now know filled with faulty intelligence, half-truths, and a fervor for war that was unstated by the conflict in Afghanistan. Back in the United States, President George W. Bush told the nation on March 19th, that it was time to free the people of Iraq and defend the world from grave danger. Within hours, thousands of troops, including my battalion, crossed the border to look for Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. So even people that are in the army don't even believe everything of why they're being told that we're over there for. There's a lot of distrust of what they're being told, especially since most of the time, like I said, we, like, years later get told we went over there for no reason at all. The weapons weren't even there, and weapons that we did find were there because we gave them the weapons or were helping the, what are they called? The armies that go against their government. I can't think of the name. Lost it and it was on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, we usually end up, rebellion armies. There we go. We usually end up helping these rebellion armies, and then these rebellion armies end up becoming extremists and it backfires on us. That seems to be the theme, the common reoccurring theme. So anyway, going on with this article, he talks about how they literally just ran tanks over newly planted crops. We just destroy the agriculture, and that takes a toll on people. These people over there spent money to plant these crops, invested their time. This is their food. I just don't understand how anybody thinks war helps anything. I mean, you can look back in history, war just makes things worse. The Crusades was a dumb long war and over Christianity, and we see how that turned out. So anyway, going back to the article, this guy said that inside the tank, we hardly felt a bump when we crushed cars under our treads. We brought war and destruction everywhere we went, and the pace was relentless. Again, destroying cars, we're destroying their means of transportation. If you go look at these cities, I bet they just, I don't think I could even fathom how much destruction we've brought to these countries. Imagine if they were here doing that to us. I don't think we would be too happy either. We'd probably be over there secretly bombing their country if they were over here destroying ours. So something else I want to bring up is this guy that is in the article said he slept 10 hours, and no one up in the chain command seemed to care about sleep. Oh, it was over the course of a week he slept 10 hours, which is absolutely crazy. I need 8 hours of sleep every day, and I'm still tired. And nobody cared about sleep until one of Charlie Company's tanks drove off a bridge over the Euphrates in the middle of the night. These people are sleep deprived and dying because of it, because the war is more important than the health of these soldiers, of our soldiers, our American lives that we're sending over there. So we have just unnecessary death. And let's see.
Well, in that vein, I think that we should get out of every war over there.
Yeah, definitely.
Those people have been fighting for thousands of years between each other, and I say, let them kill each other
off. It's not our problem.
No. If they want to destroy their people, let them go ahead and do it. They've been doing it for thousands of years.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we put people in power there that try to do good for their country, and when we move out to fight another country, the other people move back into power, so that's going to be that way forever. So just let them go.
Exactly. We can't be the parents. We're not responsible for telling another country how to run. We're responsible for our own country, and like I said, we can't even do that half the time. Let's see, what else do I have here for you guys? So this lieutenant that I'm talking about actually decided to leave service, and he was happy about it. He says that the aftermath that he was involved in was just filled with too much death and dishonor for him to ever regret leaving the service without another deployment. And that's the end of that article that I have for you guys. It's really just sad that even the people that want to fight for our country and want to, be like nationalistic and love our country can't even do it, because the wars that they're telling them stand for that, they don't. So anyway, another thing I want to mention is, so, I'm sorry, it's just kind of not funny, but it's just so ironic that our government doesn't, like, Congress doesn't care about the troops, sending them over there and having them risk their lives just for these political wars. They're like a pawn. They use them as chess pawns, really. They could care less if they get enough sleep. They could care less if they die. They could care less if they're breaking up families and children are without parents because they got parents deployed and that end up coming back or not coming back. And but as soon as the government shuts down and funding ends, that's when they care. That's when they start crying, oh, but the troops, they're not going to get paid. They don't have a paycheck. How could you shut this down? The Democrats are shutting down the government. And then when the Republicans do it, the Democrats cry. The Republicans are, they don't care about the troops either. And so when the government's about to shut down, all of a sudden the troops become another political pawn for them. And they start crying, oh, we need to pay them. They deserve to be paid. But I feel like their lives deserve to be saved. I'd rather have them come home than pay them to be over there. And something else that is pretty dumb that it was even an issue, as soon as the government was about to shut down, all of a sudden these games that they had, so the army has these games, I'm trying to find it in here, bear with me, The AFN, the American Forces Network, and they have football games and stuff they can watch on Sundays. But, you know, if the government shuts down, all of a sudden they're not able to watch it. So apparently our troops watching football games becomes more important than bringing them home. So I did have a meme that I wanted to bring up. So, you know how I said memes are kind of like political cartoons? I mean, they can be. You really just have to find the truth in it, because a lot of them aren't true. But anyway, I saw this funny meme. There's this Chum Bucket and Krabby Patty. What is it? The Krabby Patty place that Mr. Krabs has. The Krusty Krab. So one side is the Krusty Krab and one side is the Chum Bucket. And I know millennials are only going to know what I'm talking about. Nobody else will. But so the meme really means that, like, whatever picture is on top of the Chum Bucket is worse than the other one. So then whatever's on the Krusty Krab. And it had flags around the world on the Krusty Krab side. And it had the United States on the Chum Bucket. And I couldn't help myself. I'm like, oh, my God, I have to bring this up for you guys. It really just shows how the world views us. And like I said, a lot of memes, there is no truth behind it. But there is definitely a lot of truth behind this meme. The world just hates us right now. They're kind of looking at us like, what are we doing over here? We're just destroying places. We're not keeping up with our own country. We have no idea what's going on with our presidency. I mean, yes, Hillary Clinton would have been terrible to have, and I don't want her. I don't think she should be there. But, you know, Trump's a buffoon, too. Like, we just can't get anybody good ever. No matter who you put in power, they don't do what they say they're going to do. They don't do what you would like them to do. And they all run on change, and they run on bringing troops home. They run on spending less money and helping more people, and that never happens. They all have a political agenda, and they don't care about what your political agenda is. But that's besides the point. That's why we need to get some libertarians in office. Maybe they'll do a better job. I'm not saying Gary Johnson ran, but he was terrible too. We need a good libertarian. I don't know if we're going to find one, but so anyway, so I talked about the spending and about how when the government shuts down, all of a sudden the troops matter. Scrolling through my notes here. Do you have anything to add? Do you?
Yeah, there's two sides of libertarianism, a right side and a left side. So which one are you more, which one do you gravitate more to? Because, I mean, the right side,
it's
pretty
more
much
like anarchist.
No. Their philosophy is they uphold liberty as a core principle, and they want to maximize political freedom and autonomy and individual judgment. And the left, leaning libertarians, want to abolish capitalism and have everybody be the same. Private ownership as the means of production, and more states' rights, which I think the right-leaning libertarians want too, than smaller, and they want smaller federal government. You know, they want the states to have more rights for their citizens. And the anarchy part, I think, is the left-leaning liberalism or libertarianism. They want it to be more socialist type of thing, where everybody's the same, eliminating capitalism. So
actually, that's liberal. Those are liberals.
Okay.
Liberals are different from libertarians. Libertarians do not want everyone to be the same or abolish capitalism.
Well, there is a libertarian ideology that when I was doing some research, it's called arachno-libertarianism, and I think it's an offshoot. I mean, anytime you have a political ideology, there's going to be an opposite ideology of the same political. And I found that the right-leaning or the true libertarianism is
definitely
smaller federal government. People have the rights. They want people to have rights instead of a federal government telling you what you should do and not do. More state, you know.
I libertarians like, they don't hate capitalism. They love capitalism. Right. They hate corporatism. The whole government getting it, like interfering with capitalism, that's what they don't like, the crony capitalism. Mm-hmm. They love capitalism because they love the free markets. They love markets. The people should, their production is the power of it. And
right, empower people to start businesses. And,
yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
Okay. So I would say what you're saying, I'd be more to the right. Mm-hmm. Haven't heard of libertarians liking socialism, though, so I'll have to look into that. I know a lot of people confuse liberals with libertarian because they sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if maybe I would have to look into it and see.
Yeah.
Maybe read it. You could send it to me.
Okay.
And I could try to find out if maybe they were mistaken and thought liberal. Or maybe they're just identity mistaken.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'll send it to you because it was a very interesting article because I always thought there was one ideology for libertarianism. But in reading the articles, I mean, it really opened my eyes to, and I kind of figured, I mean, like if you have a republic like the United States is, I mean, you have two forms of government, the Republican and Democrat, and I don't think it should be limited to just two parties.
Oh, no,
I think that's why
not.
We're in the shape we're in.
Definitely, yeah.
And you know, the right libertarianism developed in the mid-20th century in the U.S., and then, of course, the left-leaning libertarianism came much after that because they really didn't agree with people self-ruling themselves without a strong federal government. And I don't think the federal government should intrude so much on our liberties. And I think the Constitution was written that way. They didn't want to have a strong federal government. You know, they wanted states' rights. And but I'll send it to you because it is very interesting. But I know your views seem to jive with the... they call it right libertarianism, but I think you want that smaller federal government,
yeah.
People having more rights and not being told what to do by the Fed, federal government. So,
yeah, mainly, I would say towards the right.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't want the federal government telling me what I can and cannot do,
sure.
What I can and cannot do to my body, as long as I'm not harming other people. I don't want them interfering with businesses, and I do believe in states' rights. And so, yeah, I would definitely say the right side.
Yep.
That is interesting, though. I'm excited to look into that. You know, maybe I'll learn something out of that. Always up for learning. Let's see here. So, back to the war sides of things.
Well, you know, you were if I can interrupt you again.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about the war, and when I was growing up, we had a draft, which was even worse because you got drafted, you had to go in.
Yeah, I don't like the draft.
And no. And I had always said if I got drafted, I would go. I mean, I wasn't going to run to Canada or be that, but I didn't get drafted. So, you know, I consider myself lucky there.
Oh,
I think
definitely.
The only war that I would jump in to serve without being drafted was World War II. Because we were fighting for our own preservation on from two different countries, and we almost lost to Germany. I mean, we came very mm-hmm. close to speaking German. But every other war seemed to be, we're fighting for somebody else, and, you know, I mean, we're dying. The Civil War was a big mess. I mean, you know, with so many.
Yeah, the Civil War was a mess.
But I have several friends that joined the Army and were deployed to Afghanistan, and they came home not upset that they were fighting for people that wanted to be free from the wackos over there, but that they came home saying that our government didn't do enough to protect the servicemen. And it was funny because when they went out on their night missions, they had drones go out in front of them, and the drones were manned by people over here in the United States. And he said that was one good thing because they could be protected a little bit more by enemy tanks or, you know, people hiding out. The drones could see all that and they would know. But war is no good, no matter which way you look at it.
Yeah, nothing good ever comes out of it. It's always a waste of money, waste of lives. They tell us it's going to get paid back in oil. We haven't seen that.
No.
That's a lie. I had a thought in my head as you were saying something, and I'm trying to remember.
And I made you lose it.
Oh, no, you didn't make me lose it. I lost it. What you were saying about the wackos over there. So, like I was saying with the terrorism thing, we're fighting terrorism, right? That's what they want us to think. There's bad people in the world. There's just gonna be bad people in the world, no matter what you do, no matter how many wars you fight. You know, just us being over there is gonna create more wackos. But really, being over there doesn't help us because they're gonna come over here anyway if they want to. We have a lot of homegrown wackos. I don't think you can get rid of terrorism. It comes with the price of having a big, powerful country. People are not going to like you. Other countries are going to try to get in and destroy things. They're going to try to kill people. And it's really about our home security. Fighting wars overseas is not going to do anything to protect us over here. And so we have these people signing up for the military and stuff. And yes, I believe that's their right if they want to do it. But you were bringing up the draft, and I am highly against the draft, and it's funny. I know a few people that didn't even know they signed up for the draft. It's a requirement for males. I know they're trying to get it for females, but it's a requirement. When you turn 18, you have so many days to go to the post office and sign up for the draft. And I remember them drilling it in our heads and one of my classes in high school, they're like, anyone turning 18, you all have to register to vote. And when you go register to vote, you need to, if you're a male, sign up for the draft.
They still do that.
They do still do that.
Wow.
And it hasn't gone away. They're trying to get it mandatory for females. I mean, I know they're trying to be like everyone's equal, but at the same time, I don't believe in the draft. So I don't want more people to have to sign up for the draft. We should just abolish the draft.
Sure.
I mean, we have a great, powerful army.
Oh, yeah. in Israel, every 18-year-old male and female must serve for 2 years.
That's crazy.
Every male and female. I had a doctor here, and his daughter lived in Israel with her mother. And I remember the day I just happened to have to see him. He told me his daughter was getting inducted into the Army at 18. Everyone goes in, not college, but the military for 2 years, mandatory.
That's crazy.
It is. It is.
I don't like that they do that. I'm glad we don't live there. I think it's okay if you choose to go and fight in the Army. I don't agree with the government playing with their lives and using them for political pawns and their games. But I do support the people that voluntarily go into the Army, and that's what they want to do, and they want to serve and support our country and stuff. However, I don't agree with the people that do it when they don't agree with our country. But I mean, hey, if it's what you want to do, it's what you want to do, and I'm nobody to stop you. And I just don't think you should be forced to go, and I don't think you should be forced to fight. And if you are in the service, I don't think you should be forced to fight in a war that you don't agree with.
I agree with you.
So I feel like many of our service members do not agree with these wars. They get brought over there, told they're going to be home in a year. Then it gets drawn out more years. I know somebody that was in the Air Force, and they kept telling him, you know, 2 years, 2 years. 2 years comes around, two more years, two more years.
I have a humorous story. I had a friend who was drafted. No. He joined the Navy. This was back in the 70s. He was a brilliant guy, and he went into the atomic field on submarines. And they get their training in the Great Lakes, and it gets very cold in the wintertime there.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And he caught pneumonia. And when he was delirious for a couple of days, and when he was delirious, they came in and they re-signed him for four more years. And when he found out, he was fourth in his entire class in atomic engineering. And when he found out, he was willing to serve his commitment. But after that, he started to act crazy. Like he would, this one Admiral Rickover, which you probably know the name, but he was the father of atomic submarines. And he was right here. He would come to Milton because they had a big atomic program. And this guy would call him names. He'd act like a monkey, and he would do anything to get kicked out of the Navy, and they wouldn't kick him out because he was so smart. And, oh, my gosh, the stories he would tell, you'd die laughing. I mean, the stories he would tell you. He acted everything, and his CEO came up to him one day, and he said, Bob, you can do whatever you want and insult anybody you want, but you're number three in the class, and you're never going to leave the service until your time is up.
Oh, man.
But while he was delirious, they signed him up for four more years.
That's crazy. It is very hard to, I mean, it's not hard to be discharged from service, but it can be hard.
Yeah.
I know getting drafted is hard to find a reason not to be drafted. I remember there's this one movie that I like to watch. It's Across the Universe. And, I think it was Max. Max got drafted for the Vietnam War. And they're trying everything. They're like, swallow cotton balls, do this, do that, tell them you're a pedophile. And so he goes to the place. I don't know where he went, what it was called, but he goes to the place to talk to the sergeant.
The recruitment office or something.
Yeah. And he's telling him all these crazy things, and he goes, well, as long as you don't have flat feet, and stamped his paper, and he left. He went.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, they've heard so many excuses.
Yeah.
But they don't believe anybody, and you can tell them whatever. They just don't believe you. You know, you're ready, you're gone, you know. And you don't want to be known as a dishonorable discharge.
No.
That stays with you your whole life, you know, so they know they have you, so.
Definitely. So I do want to try to talk a little positivity today, because the war can be a little draining. I was talking about getting outside and feeling the air, smelling it, breathing it in. So I've seen a lot of people lately that I'm friends with, like on Facebook. They're all talking about how sad they are and like they can't find anything that makes them happy. And really, you yourself have the power to make you happy. Nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody can do it for you. You can't be searching for somebody to make you happy. So the advice I really have to these people, is just to find something. It's going to take a little while. It's going to take time. It's going to be an everyday process. But to find something that you really, really, really enjoy, and I suggest doing it outside if you can. Like, I like to paint. I like to paint. I like to sing. I like to go for walks. But painting outside is really therapeutic, just because, like I said, nature really fills you with energy. And I know a lot of people might not be able to feel that type of energy. And it's something you have to teach yourself to do. You just, in order to feel it, you have to, like, look at the nature around you. Like, look at the tree bark. Look at the way the grass is growing. Just notice all the finer details of the things that are surrounding you. And then when you realize that it just, when you look at these details, it's really empowering to know that you're surrounded by all these forces that are just, they're living and growing every day around you, and you don't even realize it. You take it for granted all the time. I know it's hard when it rains to find the beauty in the rain, because it's like dreary, it's dark, it's not sunny, you can't do anything. But it's my suggestion for rainy days to find the energy that you need from it is to think about how you need the balance of nature. You know, you need that rain for these beautiful things to grow. You need those darker days to enjoy the sunny days more. There's a balance. It's like yin and yang, the balance of forces. And there's energy with that balance of force between it. I know it might be sounding all like Jedi mind trick on you, but if you haven't seen the latest Star Wars movie, I do suggest that. There's a lot of talk of the balance of forces and that, and the power that comes from it. But I don't, maybe I'm a Jedi in a past life, or should I say future life, because it is in the future. So another thing is just disconnecting from the like world of the internet, the social digital world. That really helps a lot to connect you to yourself and the things around you. Just turn your phone off for a day. Stay to yourself. Maybe you need a social media hiatus. I know I do them in the winter because winter is so long and so depressing that social media just makes it worse. And so I like disconnect for a month or two in the winter, and it makes me feel better. You don't get sucked into wasting your time on social media and like seeing everybody else be sad, and you really just give yourself more time to stay in touch with you. So I highly recommend a social media hiatus if you haven't tried one. It's a little
also
too...
Interact face to face with people, build yeah. up your social media that way rather than being on the computer, because we lose that personal contact. And I think that makes people happy and yeah. gives them, I mean, when you talk to people and get ideas and you're talking face to face, you can plan things and you can read a person, that makes you feel better too.
Yeah, personal contact is definitely a lot better than digital. I mean, the internet's a great place. It's a great place for resources and way to keep in touch with people. But I think, especially today, we get wrapped up in everything digital that we forget about the importance of spending time with people, like actually spending time with them, and just put your phone down, just put it down. I can't stress it enough how important it is to take your eyes away from your phone and just look at the things around you, look at the people around you, look at the person you're sitting next to, look at their hair pattern, the way it falls or something, the color of it.
The fact that they're losing their hair.
The stranger on the bus or something, you know, to put your phone down and look at the pattern on their clothes or something. Just be more aware of your surroundings and stop being in this tunnel. Everyone has tunnel vision. Everyone just is so invested in themselves, which, I mean, is a great thing to be self-absorbed to a point. But, you know, there's a healthy balance of everything. If you're too self-absorbed, you get tunnel vision and you forget about your surroundings. You forget that there's other people and you become less sympathetic and
self-absorbed, maybe.
Yeah, self-absorbed. But you're not sociable. Like, you become socially awkward. I mean, I'm socially awkward by nature, but it's kind of funny and works to my advantage. But anyway, people just forget how to communicate. And then that creates problems, like, especially if you're going into a store. I used to be I still am in customer service, and just the people you come across that don't know how to just have a normal conversation of, hi, hello, how are you? People are so rude, and it's really because they're not aware of their surroundings. It's just them in this world, just them. And that's really an issue today that I see a lot. So I really do suggest maybe reading a book too. I know a lot of us don't like reading. I enjoy reading a lot, but there are other ways. Yeah, I mean, you can have books read to you, you can have audiobooks, maybe even watching the movie of the book. I know the movies aren't always as good as the book, especially if you're a Harry Potter fan like me, but you know, if they tried to fit Harry Potter into a movie, like all the details, it would have been like a 20-hour movie. But so reading is definitely a good way for you to get in touch with yourself, because as you're reading, you hear your own voice read it, really, and you come up with the characters with your imagination. You envision them yourself, and you see it play along in your own head how you would want it. And it kind of really tells you a lot about yourself, too, when you're reading, just seeing how you come up with it. And then it's always interesting to watch the movie after and how it differs from your idea of the book. But also, certain authors bring out different sides of you. I know if you read Shakespeare, which many of you aren't going to do, but Shakespeare teaches you more about yourself than he teaches you about anything else, because all of his plays are having to do with human nature and different aspects of it. So I know you're probably not going to read Shakespeare, but I highly recommend him. I really like him. He's really good. He's actually not that hard to read either. But anyway, starting to run out of time here, so I'm going to try to wrap it up a little bit. That's pretty much all I have for you today. And next week, I will be planning to talk about big pharma, the pharmaceutical industry. So that should be interesting. So anyway, you can contact me multiple ways through the digital world, because that's what's so good about it. You can email me. It's shakedownshanpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook, go to my page, and you can follow, like it, invite your friends, I don't know, give me some feedback. I enjoy feedback greatly. I'm a big fan of constructive criticism, and I really do enjoy hearing opposing views. My Facebook page is Shakedown Shan. I made all my handles pretty easy to follow for you guys. I do have an Instagram page. It's shakedown_Shan. I do have a Twitter at shakedownshan, and I am also now on iTunes. And I'll be branching out to more platforms. And I also just want to give a big thank you again to Rick Thompson from Saratoga Broadcasting, who you can hear me live on his website, saratogabroadcasting.com. He's been great. He provides me with this platform to have a voice and all the tools necessary to share my thoughts and ideas with you all to spread the message of liberty and positivity. And so, yeah, I'll be back here next week on Saturday, live at saratogabroadcasting.com, and look forward to looking for my uploaded podcast during the week. Positive vibes, guys.